This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Much to the frustration of their parents and teachers, there are some truly brilliant young people out there who are just terrible at being students.
As I tell the students I work with today, that I had to get a D before I could get a PhD.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll listen again to our talk with a veteran educator about what it takes to develop the skills that help a student learn how to learn. Then we'll head to New York State, where the new Democratic majority in the state legislature has voted to give college tuition assistance to the children of undocumented immigrants. And we'll spend an academic minute checking the air quality inside your home. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Sometimes being smart just isn't good enough. According to Carrie Green, without motivation and the proper learning skills, even the most successful elementary student can encounter big trouble as they move on to higher education. He outlines those skills and how to perfect them in his book, Success Skills for High School, College, and Career. Dr. Carrie J. Green spent 20 years as an educator and school administrator before striking out on his own to motivate students to succeed. We spoke about the book last winter, and I asked him where the idea for this project came from.
It all started years ago when I was a college student. I did quite well in high school, and I got to the university, and I nearly flunked out of my first chemistry class. And that was quite a shock. I thought I didn't understand chemistry, but it turns out I really didn't understand how to study, so I lacked the success skills that I needed. And I've seen over the years, as I was a faculty member for 20 years, I saw a lot of young students who I thought were pretty intelligent, but they weren't really performing at the level of their ability. And it hit me that it seems to be a skills deficit as much as anything else, and there's a gap between our performance and our ability sometimes, and I think the key is removing the limitations that are within our control. So if we can develop our skill set, that allows us to perform at the level of our ability. And as I said, my score in chemistry was pretty bad until I got my academic success skills figured out, and I was able to take the course again and do quite well and ultimately earn a PhD. And as I tell the students I work with today, that I had to get a D before I could get a PhD.
Okay. I hear that a lot from parents more than anyone else, but from teachers too, that, you know, this kid is brilliant. He's just a terrible student.
Yeah. And there's a difference between not being able to do something and not knowing how to do something. And I'll use a very simple example of riding a bike. Before we learned how to ride a bike, we had the intelligence to ride a bike. We just didn't know how to ride a bike. And I think the same thing is true with a lot of areas in life, and certainly in academics. As I said, I thought my performance in chemistry was solely due to my understanding of chemistry, but the underlying issue was the lack of skills. And I think, again, that is true for many students in many aspects of life. If oftentimes we look at using the case of students, we look at the individual course and think, gee whiz, this is hard, or I can't do this. But really, if we dig down and work hard and work smart, we often can accomplish much more than we think we can. And in my case, it took me about flunking out of college to figure that out.
Well, when you're an 18-year-old heading into college, do you really have the self-awareness to know that you need a plan?
I have commented, and it's only part jokingly, that we should teach freshman seminar to sophomores, because sometimes as a freshman we don't know what we don't know, and it's not until we get in there and find out that those classes are pretty tough and find out that we don't know quite what we thought we did, then once that happens, let's say, we're more likely to learn. So I think that self-awareness is huge. I think the ability to understand ourselves, our strengths, and our weaknesses, and not only understand those, but be able to fix the weaknesses that we can and also align our efforts with our strengths, I think that's very, very important to success. But I think you're absolutely right, and it's hard to see what we're capable of if we've not really been challenged. And as I said, college challenged me quite a bit, and I was able to figure it out, but it wasn't until I made a mistake.
Part of what you write about in the book, and one of the exercises you actually give in the book, is to watch two people debate and just kind of, you know, maybe a subject you know, maybe a subject you don't know, and come down on one side or the other and then try to describe why. Talk about that.
Well, you're talking about, of course, our critical thinking discussion. And oftentimes, I think when we, or I'll speak for myself, speak for a lot of students I worked with over the years, we often think about learning in terms of being able to memorize something. I can, you know, cram for this test, or I can remember these facts and figures and I'll be all right. And that's not too bad in the early years. But as we move into college and graduate school and into life, we really need to be able to think and be able to think independently and be able to separate fact from opinion. And that involves evaluating our own biases and our own assumptions. We need to ask questions, and of course we need to evaluate evidence. And that example that you're referring to is something that a student could simply do by watching a debate on television. And they may not be an expert in the area, but I think with a little practice, they'll be able to figure out when somebody's making a statement that's kind of their opinion versus a statement that's based on fact. And certainly informed opinion is very important, don't get me wrong. But when it gets right down to it, the ability to think on your own, draw your own conclusions based on the information that's available to you, that is a very important skill for young people to develop.
You devote an entire chapter in your book to the importance of being a good communicator and learning how to communicate. How is communication important to being a learner?
Well, I think the first thing is being a good listener. Consider a student that's sitting in class listening to a lecture. It's quite easy for our minds to drift. But a good communicator is a good listener. So I think the way communication can help a student and help learning, of course, is being able to listen, not only in class, but listen to your faculty when you go to office hours and those kind of things. Because I know over the years I've explained stuff to students, and sometimes I think they just weren't listening. Other times I think they were listening, but they didn't get it. But there's a difference between listening and not getting it, and not getting it because you're not listening. So the first thing, I think, of course, is to focus on listening to be a good learner. The next thing, of course, is being able to articulate your ideas. If you have the best idea in the world, but you can't get that information across, if you can't share that intelligently with other people, that information is really of no use. And I think about a student writing an answer to an essay question or a short answer question on an exam. The ability to articulate clearly the answer to that question is very, very important. So having the knowledge, of course, is the first step, but being able to communicate it such that others can understand and get to the point, as I talked about in critical thinking, it's very important to be able to develop an argument to support your case. So in the case of learning, it's, of course, drawing on the knowledge and synthesizing the information you have to come up to the answers to the questions on your exams and certainly be able to articulate those appropriately. And then you get out of school, of course, and now it's no longer a written exam, but it's life coming at you where you need to synthesize information and be able to draw conclusions and then communicate those with others.
You were, of course, for years a teacher and a part of the school system. Now you're on the outside. What can you do on the outside that you couldn't do when you were on the inside?
Well, I think I can devote 100% of my time to working on success skills development for young folks, and that's very important for me. I think this is a big puzzle, a big issue, and we all have a piece. I think certainly being inside higher education, being in the classroom is absolutely important. And the same thing for advisors and being able to work with students, and everybody who comes in contact with a student can help that student along. In fact, I'm reminded of a story of several years ago. I had a discussion with students and asked them who was the most important person in their life or who had the greatest influence on their academic success. And we hear parents and teachers and that kind of thing, but one of the students commented that it was her supervisor for her on-campus position, and this person wasn't a faculty member, it wasn't a teacher, but he had a tremendous impact on this young person because he took the time to listen, he mentored her, he helped her make some decisions, and ultimately she worked out. Ultimately, she was successful in school. But the main thing for me being outside now is I can dedicate my time 100% to working with young people on these success skills.
are there things in the school systems now that make it difficult while being in the inside to help students like that? I'm thinking of standardized testing and stuff like that.
Well, coming from a higher education background, I think there are a lot of things competing for faculty time. If they're at a research-intensive university, certainly there's research to do. There's also a deeper issue that I found, and that is teaching my subject matter, which certainly was important to me. And when I started teaching, that was my main focus. If I could teach the students the science of our discipline, then I felt I was doing good. But as I transitioned through my career and up until the point that I left, I kind of changed my philosophy to the point of trying to really emphasize these success skills. And I think there's a lot of folks trying to do that, but it's somewhat difficult to cover all the material. But my point is, and you can have standalone courses on critical thinking, and those are important, don't get me wrong, but incorporating the critical thinking skills into a course is important. Have the student work within the context of their discipline. Certainly the communication skills, getting the writing and the speaking into the curriculum is very, very important. And there are a lot of folks doing that. But again, it's sometimes it can be difficult, especially if the faculty and teachers are not necessarily experts or really up on that. It takes some extra time and effort, but it's very important. And I think a lot of schools are moving that way as they recognize the importance of these skills.
Still to come, our conversation with Kerry Green continues with a look at some basic advice for students and teachers. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Kerry J. Green, a veteran educator and the author of the book Success Skills for High School, College, and Career. I asked Dr. Green, what is the most important message he has for students and teachers?
What I would tell a student is attitude is probably the number one factor that I've seen influencing success. And what I mean by that is a student who has the right attitude is willing to develop the skills they need. They're willing to put in the time they need. They're willing to give their best effort. And they're willing, if they make a mistake or have a trouble with a class, they're willing to get help. And that is so, so, so important. And I think sometimes it's easy to kind of hit the brick wall. And again, I'll go back to my example of the chemistry class. I considered dropping out of school. I thought, hey, you know, I tried this. It didn't work out that well in this class. Maybe college isn't for me. And I could have easily dropped out and tried to do something else. But fortunately, I had the fortitude to try again, and I learned that I could do it if I put forth the right effort. And having that attitude, it's not being arrogant. You got to balance your belief in yourself with your humility and be able to ask for help and realize you don't know everything. But to me, an attitude of success, an attitude of I can do it, is very, very important because that integrates and empowers all the other things that underlie success. As far as a teacher goes, my advice to a teacher is obviously do the best you can and meet these students where they're at and try to incorporate these soft skills, these success skills into your coursework as best you can. And the critical thinking exercises and the communication exercises are very, very important. It takes extra time and it takes extra work, but it's certainly well worth the investment.
Finally, how do these academic skills and methods convert into a career for a student?
Well, a lot of the academic success skills that are needed also are the so-called soft skills. For example, time management is very, very important for a student. It's also very, very important for somebody starting a new job, and it's certainly important as you move up the chain of command. So there is a lot of overlap. Good communication skills, as we've discussed earlier, time management, work ethic, critical thinking. A lot of these skills that are important in the working world or important in life in general are also very important for students. And being able to read and prepare for a test, they may not be preparing for a written test when they get on the job, but certainly the skills they have of pulling information together, synthesizing information, and being able to respond to questions and address problems. And so the students develop those skills, then those skills transfer into their career. And that's why I like the integration of the academic success skills and the soft skills, because many of them overlap and are identical or very similar. I guess another thing that I'd like to share with young people, and you'll know this too just from your life experience, that it's okay to fail. It's okay to take a class and not do that well in it. If you've done your best, then that's the best you can do. But if you fail, it doesn't mean you can't do it. This is the most important thing. An initial fail does not mean that you're not capable of doing that. And don't give up. Now, sometimes a student will work very hard and they will not be able to get through a particular class. If that's the case, then I encourage them to back up, be sure that their strengths and their academic major align, and they can take assessments. Students can take assessments at the Career Center on campus and help them. Those assessments will help them hone in on what they're really good at and what they care about. So if a student is really struggling, but they're limited by their academic success skills, or maybe they're not working as hard as they should, I suggest they keep going in that particular line. If, on the other hand, they're working very hard, they've got their academic success skills worked out, they're doing the best job they can have, and they still struggle, then I encourage them to consider a change of major. And again, counselors, advisors that are on campus or in schools are very good at helping students align their skills and their abilities with an academic major, which of course ultimately leads into a career.
Well, I can certainly confirm you can have a decent career without knowing how to do trigonometry.
Exactly.
Again, the name of Dr. Carrie J. Green's book is Success Skills for High School, College, and Career. You can learn more at carriejgreen.com. Since Democrats took control of the New York State Legislature this year, they have been passing bills that have been stymied for years by the state Senate when it was in Republican control. Bills concerning voting rights, abortion, and immigration have dominated the news. In late January, the legislature approved a measure known as the DREAM Act that would offer college aid for children of undocumented immigrants, but stopped short of acting on a measure to offer driver's licenses to immigrants in New York without documentation. Karen DeWitt reports.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, at an announcement packed with young immigrants seeking to go to college, celebrated the measure's expected success.
Today we will pass the DREAM Act for the ninth and final time.
Unlike in past years, when Republicans in the state Senate blocked the bill, Democrats who now lead that chamber also approved the measure, and Governor Andrew Cuomo is a supporter. Assemblywoman Catalina Cruz was an active member of the Dreamer movement before she was elected to the state assembly last fall. Cruz came to the U.S. with her mother when she was a child to escape the drug wars in Colombia. She overstayed her visa and was undocumented for 13 years until she became a citizen when she married her high school boyfriend. She became a labor and immigration lawyer. She says the law is one step towards eliminating the discrimination that undocumented immigrants face.
Our parents have contributed millions of dollars into the New York State economy, and we have contributed millions of dollars into the New York State economy, yet we're not seen as human because we don't have a piece of paper. That's not fair. We are as American as anybody who was born here. Many of us don't even remember the country where we were born. Many don't even speak the language.
The DREAM Act was renamed the Jose Peralta New York State DREAM Act after the late senator who died suddenly of complications from acute leukemia at the age of 47 last November. Peralta, a Democrat from Queens, was a tireless backer of the DREAM Act. He even joined the now-defunct Independent Democratic Conference in hopes of advancing the measure, but that proved his political undoing, and he lost his seat in a primary last September. His wife, Evelyn Peralta, attended the announcement and witnessed the vote along with her children. She says the issue was a labor of love for her late husband.
Today, my husband's dream becomes our reality. To every young immigrant hearing my words, we love you. We see you, and we welcome you into our American family. The spirit of my husband is alive in this room.
GOP members in both houses voted against the bill. Senator Robert Ort, a Republican who represents a district in the Buffalo-Niagara Falls region, says the $27 million in college aid to undocumented immigrants is not fair to middle-class New York residents, who he says are struggling with college costs. He says many of his constituents hold large student loan debts.
They not only have to struggle to pay back their loans or pay that tuition, but they also know that their dollars are going to pay for illegal immigrants. When we can take care of every American citizen who is here legally, who is played by the rules and paid into the system, then we can talk about those who are not.
The Senate also voted to raise the family income eligibility for New York residents for the state's tuition assistance program from $80,000 to $95,000 a year. The Assembly did not take up the measure. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie says it will be discussed as part of the budget. Immigrants' rights groups are also seeking access to driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. The sponsor of the DREAM Act in the Assembly, Carmen De La Rosa, says the measure is more than just a box checked off the agenda.
This is also about an immigrant community in New York State that needs protections. We must make sure that the driver's license bill is passed.
That bill was not voted on Wednesday. Speaker Hastie says his Democratic members plan to discuss the issue soon. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Americans have access to a lot of food, and we waste way too much of it. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
How to reduce food waste? Recycle it. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Matthew Wallenstein, professor in the Department of Soil and Crop Sciences at Colorado State University, determines how wasted food can help repair degraded soil.
Thanks to amazing advances in agricultural technology, the average U.S. farmer produces 12 times as much food per year as they did in 1950. But up to 40% of the food we produce is never consumed. The rest is wasted, with most of it going to landfills. At the same time, the soil that our food production depends on has been eroded and degraded. It's clear that we need to regenerate soil health in order to sustain a growing population. Soil organic matter, that dark spongy material, is the key to healthy soils that store water for plants and support microbes that cycle nutrients. In fact, we now know that dead microbial bodies, called necromass, are the primary component of soil organic matter. To regenerate our soils, we need to feed the microbes. What if, rather than sending food waste to landfills, we could send it back to the farm, where it can be recycled into soil organic matter? That's exactly what we do when we compost complex mixtures of food waste. Better yet, what if we diverted byproducts of food manufacturing and transformed them into technologically advanced soil amendments? During the production of the mozzarella cheese you might find on your pizza, vast quantities of the simple sugar lactose are extracted. A special form of lactose called lactobionate has some extraordinary properties. We found that it could turn soils into sponges, soaking up rain for plants to use later. Soil microbes also convert it into soil organic matter, thus improving soil health. Our aim is to close the loop on our food production systems by diverting waste and byproducts back to the farm to enhance agricultural sustainability.
And that was Matthew Wallenstein of Colorado State University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at @TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.